Hello, and welcome to It's All About Choices. This is the show where my guests and I discuss our lives and our careers framed through the choices we've made, some good and some bad. My name is David Barrow, and for those of you that don't know me, I've been working in IT service-related roles for 29 years. 2023 is going to mark my 30th year in the workplace. It's a career that started upon leaving school, with very few qualifications and just a passing interest in information technology. I didn't set out to do this job. In fact, I didn't really set out to do any of my first few jobs. I wanted to be a fighter pilot, but colour blindness and a distinct lack of effort and qualifications on my part got in the way. But these 30 years have really flown by, and ironically, that's probably the closest I've ever got to being a fighter pilot. So during this series, my guests and I will reflect on the choices we have made that have led us up to today and some future choices. And we don't do this just for ourselves, but because we think it'd be great to share these experiences to help others on their career journeys who face similar choices to those we have faced across our career paths. Each episode of It's All About Choices will begin with a period on my own journey, and my guests will be people I first met at that time. And today I'll be joined by Bex Doherty and James Doherty, all the way from Auckland, New Zealand. Today, Bex works as a people and culture manager and James as a project delivery leader. But back in the mid-2000s, we all worked in and around the City of London. Bex working with a team of highly skilled coordinators, with James and I supporting the critical information technology of the same investment management business. Each of us choosing to operate in what was a highly pressurized environment. So we'll discuss the choices that led to us working around one another and how today's show led to a rekindling of memories, such as how Bex and James went from sitting in their sun-kissed Auckland lounge reading the morning papers to being on a flight from New Zealand to Heathrow 9 weeks later, or how attempting to fit into a new country can lead you to choose an interesting place or home, or indeed the impact of choosing not to fit in when life holds another path for you. We'll also discuss how choices made under duress and your chosen response to those enables you to develop lifelong friendships that time and distance cannot change or break. If you're watching live via YouTube or LinkedIn, please feel free to ask questions or just say hello. Or you could wish Bex a happy birthday, as she's been very kind to join me on her birthday eve. So it's all about choices. I'm now going to introduce you to Bex and James. Good evening to you both. How are you doing?
Hey.
Yeah, very good. Thanks, Dan. Great to see you.
You too. Great to see you both, all those thousands of miles away. Thanks for joining me for your evening and Bex's birthday evening.
Raving Friday night here. Yeah.
Friday night, so I'm allowed to be drinking beer.
Water?
Absolutely. Water and beer. I'm into that. I'm
so 9 o'clock here. I wine while I did this, actually.
Given should.
The hour. Okay. Next time I'll know.
Next time. This is a safe place. You can have a drink. If it was 9 a.m. there and 9 a.m. here, we might have to question that. But I think you're fairly good. But this is a safe place. So, thank you both for joining. I mean, it's great to catch up with you both. We last saw each other physically 12 years ago. Yes. But we first met in 2005 when I joined Fidelity. But what I'd love to do, if we could start, please, is take you back to the year 2000 when you were both sat in Auckland reading the morning papers and you somehow ended up in London 9 weeks later. I'd love to know about the choices that led to you doing that.
Yeah, well, I remember, when we were there, post Y2K, which didn't happen. Bex had just gone away. You'd been away to Brazil, for a visit, and we were just sitting there on the couches. I remember the computer news, and I was reading about contractors that go from place to place to place, and the money that they can make from a New Zealander perspective. And I just sort of casually said to Bex, yeah, wouldn't that be cool to do?
And no, you said there's silly money in London.
Yeah, but ironically then, when I came over and worked in London, I worked for Fidelity just about the whole time I was there. So I never did the whole contractor going from place to place. We also never did the Kiwi hang around with lots of other Kiwis and work in a pub. It was actually wanting to making sure that we immersed ourselves in the English hood of where we were.
But coming back to that lounge room as well, so we had been recently diagnosed as infertile and that we would need IVF, and the cost of it, we were looking at going, that's literally a deposit on a house at that time. And so when James goes, there's silly money in London, and it was just like this casual, oh, you know, and I went, well, what are we doing here then? And it was a very serious response from me. And he kind of went, ah, good point. That was it.
And then you're 9 weeks later landing in Heathrow.
Well, 3 weeks later, moving in with our best friend, who's still our best friend, luckily, you'll be pleased to know.
Brilliant.
Moving in with her to save on some rent and to afford those Heathrow tickets, yeah.
Wow. It's, I mean... I've talked in the past on this show about my choice to move from 200 miles away, and that felt monumental. So for you guys, that must have been huge. And you mentioned about that whole settling in and wanting to immerse yourself. I find that really interesting because if I think back when I met you, I don't myself recall thinking, oh, from New Zealand. I don't think I recall anything other than these are just cool people. But I don't know whether that comes from me having worked in London for a few years there and been around a load of Australian, New Zealand, South African people. But I lived in Acton, so I was right bang in the middle of that whole scene. But you guys chose to move elsewhere, didn't you?
Yeah, and specifically to a place with no Kiwis or Aussies.
Mm. Well, actually, what we did was we arrived into West Kensington near Earl's Court just because, you know, that's where we thought Kiwis go, and trying to find a place. I think you found a place in the first day simply because where we were staying actually had a shower in the bedroom. But yeah,
on the carpet.
So we were there in West Kensington for 18 months, and that was really nice.
Yeah, it was lovely.
Awesome. But my first job was actually out in Bromley, and so I said, well, why don't we move out to there? And we
were pregnant then.
We were, and we moved out and just found that it was just so much more friendlier outside of further away we went from the centre of London. And we really enjoyed Bromley. Bromley was beautiful. We loved the...
Yeah, parks for Joel when he was born. I used to take him with little sunglasses for picnics.
Bromley's beautiful. I lived nearby in Crystal Palace, so it's mad how the world works. And how was that? I mean, was it everything you expected it to be? And when we talk, not just from the career perspective, but just from that life perspective, you know, you both have to build a life there as potential parents, new parents. Was it? And I know in your role, Bex, you're working sort of in that coordination space. Was it everything you expected it to be? Had you been here before?
No. So, and I had come from an HR space as well. So taking on the coordinator role was, it was just meant to be something nice and easy that I got to see more of my husband, because like you, he used to sometimes take that first train and arrive home on the last. And also just that balance of, you know, being a mum and meeting some people. For me, I found it very lonely. I'm quite a social creature. We had a lot of friends here, and I just, yeah, I did get quite lonely in that little baby bubble. So after a year, I went to Fidelity and worked as one of the coordinators and had quite a good time with the other coordinators.
We'll delve into that a little bit later, actually. I remember, we will delve into it, but I remember how important those people were to help us get our job done.
Don't piss them off. That is the theme or the receptionist ever in any job.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's a piece of advice that James gave me that we'll cover a little bit later. But whilst we're speaking about fidelity, I'd like to move on to another question. But before I do so, I'd like to just pop something on screen from the person in question.
Oh, hi, Doug. He's yes, long overdue another roast lamb.
Mm. Oh, we talk it's about it an awful lot.
Yes.
I keep telling him to come and see you. I still remember how great it is over there, and we're going to come back. So maybe I'll bring Doug with me.
Come back together.
Yeah. I'll pop him in my suitcase.
No, he's very tall.
it will be a very tall suitcase. Maybe one of his Viola cases. But, yeah, I mean, we talk about, you know, I'd say I've not seen you face-to-face for 12 years, but I very much recall your excellent hospitality, and it's one of the things that Doug and I talk about as well from when you used to hang out. But coming back to the choices, and you know, Doug is an ex-guest, and we've talked about fidelity. There was a moment where, as a result of 9/11, that there was certain layoffs, and Doug had to lay you off, James.
Yeah.
And Doug always says, but the mad thing is they invited me over for dinner afterwards. And I just think, what such a lovely response that is. And I'm just interested to understand what your thought process was, not necessarily behind inviting Doug to dinner, though that's interesting, but just that, that whole, you know, what a situation to find yourself in, new parent, potential parent. I can't remember what stage you were at. And then that happens.
No, we were still trying then.
And then you invite him for dinner.
Our plans on hold too for IVF, that whole thing. We ran out of money for IVF. So, yeah, we really shouldn't have liked Doug very much.
We had done one IVF, hadn't we? Yeah. But, yeah, but I mean, I did build a really good rapport with Doug, just simply because he's such a nice guy. Yeah. And we knew that he was in London by himself, and we were in London by ourselves, wasn't far away. And so I just wanted to make sure that we still had that relationship. It wasn't a personal thing that that he didn't want me working at Fidelity. No, not the case at all. It was just circumstances. So I could see past the emotional drama of that job, and it's just part and parcel of life. You know, you can move on. And ironically, 6 months later, we moved on, and I think I was actually had a job offer at someone like Merrill Lynch or something. And
PwC.
Oh, there you go. And they were asking me for a referee, so I got them to ask Doug. And then Doug realised that I was looking, and then got in touch with me and said, well, do you want to just come back and work with Fidelity? We're hiring again. And so I did. And, yeah, then I was there for another 6 years or something.
Something
like that. Yeah. Something like that. I think that's great. I put in the original question how karma works. It's magic. But I think in this case, it's just two really good sets of people keeping in touch, and then karma works. It's magic. And you know, it could have been so easy to make a different choice in that scenario, but your logic is absolutely brilliant. You know, good person. Well, it's not personal. That's life.
I think the other thing is, coming from New Zealand, we are such a small community, and you really can't burn bridges with people because you do come across them, or come across friends of friends or different people. So it's really important to network, and also to realize that it's business. It's not personal. But you know, in that case, we just wanted to stay in touch with Doug. And
we really liked Doug. We enjoyed his company. So why wouldn't we have him for dinner?
Absolutely. And that was the lamb.
It was a bit weird when he rang me, because I was waiting to hear how the PwC interview, the reference check had gone, like that everything was okay and that we're going to PwC on Monday. And he goes, actually, I'm going back to Fidelity on Monday. And I was like, okay, right.
But yeah, Fidelity was such an interesting place to work. I'll put it like that.
I learned so much from that place. It was really awesome to speak to the range of people, you know, being able to have traders and fund managers. But everyone all the way through, I've got fond memories of just about everyone there, and you know, learned things and still keep in touch with people through Facebook and stuff. So it's fantastic to see what they're up to.
Taught me stuff too, is, you know, like even just, you know, while I'm at home with babies, you know, I've got twin babies and a toddler, that's a lot of gaga all day. Just listening to his day was really interesting sometimes about, you know, I got to learn what ticker boards were in a training. You know, these, I did learn stuff. See?
It's I mean, I came away from Fidelity as a godparent of one of the traders' daughters, but two of them actually. But for me, I came away from a really highly, I guess with IBM, a highly organized company, should I say, very corporate. And if we come back to the coordinator role, I remember coming in, and I was brought in for that corporate mindset, I believe, to add some governance to some of the madness that went around Fidelity. And in doing so, certainly from yourself, James, I remember receiving some advice when you gave me the walk around. And the first place you took me to was to the coordinators. And yeah, that's right. And you basically said to me on the way to them, these are the people that are going to get things done for you. Everyone else is great to know and will definitely need to be influenced. But if you want to get anything done, these are the people that are going to make it happen for you. And for me, that was a real eye opener, because getting things done previously was meeting with account managers and salespeople and stuff like that. So this was entirely different, as well as an entirely different environment. But I'd just like to come back to that role though, Bets, because I know that working in that area of the business gave you some fairly complex life choices as well. And I'd be interested to know about them, but also the value of that role. I mean, I've talked about it, but from your perspective, I know we've got some people who watch who are kind of in that field. Be interesting to know a bit more about that too.
So I think that role, it was looking after usually, I think it was sort of like three or four people at a time. Like some might have more, some might have less if they've got someone that's, and then I think wasn't Hayley just
for one. There's a couple of just PAs
of that were just for one. But generally you had sort of three or four, and I think it was what I loved about it was that it was incredibly collaborative, both throughout the day, where you could ask for anything that you didn't know or understand. No question was too stupid. When I was missing my little boy and having a little cry in the toilet, what I thought quietly was okay too. I'll never forget that useful coordinator that comforted me that day. And so that they were quite special on that front, but also, man, could they drink in the evening. Well, all your fund managers were plying them with products. Okay, so you guys, your fund managers would look at Clarins. Clarins would bring in all the product, and of course they can't accept that stuff, so they'd just send it all to their coordinators, who used to, by the way, sometimes put that on eBay. So
so after 7 years they weren't getting in trouble.
No, yeah, statute finished, and I didn't name any names, although I could if you need me to.
We might have one or two watching.
So it partly was also that the bigger clients would put on evening get-togethers for those coordinators to impress them. Like James says, that's who you've got to get past. That is your front door. And so, yeah, those girls could really drink. And I'm a Kiwi girl. I thought I could handle a drink, but one of them had to put me on a train and James had to get me off it in Bromley, and I've never been so embarrassed. So they had that real connection through the day as well as socially.
A camaraderie.
Oh, definitely hugely. Camaraderie. And you know so many from that day that are still in contact now, that I still personally see that have moved to Australia, so I get to see them in Sydney. There's lots. I can tell you lots of them that you'd probably remember. So there was a lot to it, but you had to look after your guys. And unfortunately, when I say guys, I mean it.
Mm. Yeah, it's, and I think that's something about that world that, when I recall it, that sometimes makes me shudder a little bit. It's like, yep. it's a very
made me shudder a lot.
Yeah, okay. It's a, there's a split in that organization. Yeah,
it actually really impacted on me when I walked around on my first day and saw all the outer offices were male, and all the inner cubicles were female, and that was disappointing. It was just disappointing that I guess more women might not have made that choice. I'm not suggesting in any way it was Fidelity's choice for it to be that way. I'm just saying it was a disappointing state of the nation, I guess.
Yeah,
you looked after your people. For me, there then came the challenge of it actually came down to our son. So Joel was our fourth IVF. We did lose a baby a little bit later in our first pregnancy. So he was like just so special to us. So even though I wanted to be with my husband and with him and also do a job and, you know, all of those things, I came into work one day and I had someone explain something from kindergarten to me, and I was so angry that I kicked the bin just out of frustration, not something I would normally do. It wasn't a terribly professional response, but this person was calling me from the States. He was one of my guys, and I thought, I can't tell you what I want to say, so I'm just going to quietly kick this bin. And from over the cubicle was someone else who was just in hysterics, and then said to me, look, on that note, if you're not necessarily, you know, I've pretty much picked up over the last weeks that this isn't where you've been, do you want to think about something a bit more serious, and do you want to, like, you know, shall we look at this? And I sort of got a gauge on what sort of salary figure came with it and picked my jaw up off the floor after that. And so that sort of, there was some good to be done in it. There was a nice salary. There was that working with James and all of the IT team, actually, I got on with really well. It was a real temptation. And then we worked out that child daycare wouldn't work for their hours, so we'd need a nanny. And it was that word that made me go, ooh.
Well, you were missing him as well. You're missing,
I was.
You were missing the interaction during the day, and you were getting,
but I did think I'd get over it. I thought I'd settle. And I would have, actually, I think. But actually, it was the word nanny, and it was, we have been through hell to get this kid, and do we really want him raised by a nanny? And that's what it would have meant. So we discussed it very briefly, because once I actually said that, oh, nanny, James went, look, I respect whatever decision you want to make, but I definitely back you if you want to be, you know, and we did want to have more kids, as you pointed out at that point. So, yeah, that was it. Sorry, that was a long way around of saying don't piss off callers, and that is, wasn't it?
No, but it's the truth, don't piss off coordinators. But yeah, because I find it's, yeah, I had choices at Fidelity. I mean, frankly, the reason I chose to go there was financially motivated. There's no two bones about that. I'd been working at IBM for quite a while, and when I heard what the salary was going to be, actually, I don't think I heard what the salary was going to be. I think I made up what I was getting paid, and Fidelity beat it fairly easily. And I was like, I could have gone higher when I was at the interview.
You always think that, but I promise you, it doesn't work like that.
No. And I discovered that over 3 years working at Fidelity. I really enjoyed working there. I really enjoyed the camaraderie. I enjoyed the nights out. I enjoyed less the first train out and the last train home. I know you've got some stories around that, James. And let's take that, and then I'll talk about how it impacted me. But because, yeah, living in London, with what was great about it, but also what wasn't so good, especially with that first train out and last train home.
Well, yeah, when we had the twins, so at one stage we had one 2 year old and two very young ones.
Four 4 week olds.
Yeah. And you know, I'd normally go and catch the train at about 5:30 to be able to get in to look after the traders at 7:30. I think this particular one that you're talking about was when we had a particular fund manager meeting that I was helping support in the Butchers Guild, and I missed my train for whatever reason, and I just knew that I couldn't wait for the next one. I had to get to a different town to catch this other one, and the only way I was going to get that was going to get Bex to drive me. But the problem was, 4-week-old twins, they were still asleep.
No, I was nursing one of them.
Wow.
One of them was still asleep, so I'm hoping that they'll stay not hungry until this one's finished being hungry. Mm. And I've got a 2-year-old asleep.
I wasn't so happy about getting put into the car, but you just can't leave them. So, yeah, so we raced over to this other town and managed to get to the car park, see the train there. So I leapt out of the car and raced across and managed to catch the train. Unbeknownst to me, Bex is sitting in the back seat of the car and she can't actually get out because the kitty locks are
on. Oh, and no. I'm in the hump seat. I've got two car seats either side of me. I'm in the hump seat. I've just had a C-section. Like, no, they were 3 weeks old because I was like 3 weeks post-section. I wasn't even allowed to drive yet. And, yeah, I had to climb into the front of the car, and I tell you what, I could have killed him. I could have killed him.
Yeah, that was a long day, as I remember, but it was a success. Yeah. So yeah. I was really happy. I mean, yeah.
You're still here to tell the tale, at least.
Well, yeah, but no, I did get my own back.
How? What did you do?
Was this the rest of the story? Mm. So Butchers Guild, it was a really interesting place, had all these things, plaques and that sort of stuff. And I came home so late. I was so naked. And I started telling Bex about this. And I was telling her how there was a knife. What is it? The
cleaver.
Cleaver. And it was set there framed. And it was actually a cleaver that was used for the first leg of lamb that had come over on the boat from New Zealand to be served to Queen Victoria at that time. And I was going through this story, and to be honest, it was probably a pretty boring story. It was so boring that I actually fell asleep in the middle of it.
Twice. Twice I fell asleep.
But then
I woke him up and I said, carry on, and he started again.
From the start.
And then he fell asleep again, and I thought, you cheeky bugger. So I elbowed him, and I went, guess what? There's a cleaver that has been put in this place, in this butcher's guild, because there was a leg of lamb that first came. And he goes, how do you know that?
Brilliant. That's fantastic. But, yeah, they were that's what I mean. I remember it being fun but hard. And I remember looking forward to Thursday nights and hating Friday mornings because, yeah, Thursday was the new Friday. Liking Friday lunchtimes, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I explain that to people over here and they just don't understand it. And it's like, oh, that makes sense. You know, why would you waste a hangover on a Saturday?
Yeah. I was in the city last Thursday for the first time in a while and the first time post COVID that it's felt like it was used to feel.
Yeah.
But whenever I get the chance, I always walk down Cannon Street and through St. Paul's and just go to either go to some of the pubs we used to go to or at least just walk past. But last Thursday, I realised how old I am because I was walking around and in my head going, damn it, it's only 6 o'clock. Oh, they can't walk. It's 7 o'clock. Oh, the state of them. And then I was thinking, yeah, been there. but I do remember, if I'm honest, like that whole period, say learning a lot, being really really hard work but really good fun. But I think it was, if I'm honest, the first time in my life that I ended up understanding what the concept of, of, I probably didn't know what it was called, but mental health would be. I remember being fatigued and different, but not physically. It was mentally, but I just didn't get it. And I think, yeah, looking back, I kind of applaud, stroke, chastise myself for doing what I did in terms of trying to work so hard and play so hard. And I guess, I don't know whether that's London life or Fidelity life, but what would you guys view and be on that? Was it, do you think it's London life, or was it just our work that led us to do those things?
I think at the time it was actually quite a London culture to do that. Mm. I mean, we're not from anywhere near there, as far away as you can be now. But yeah, it was very much a culture of doing that. And that was part of how you networked and how you grew that camaraderie, and be able to enjoy yourself, but also make sure you could still catch the last train, or make sure you wake up before the train keeps on carrying you away.
Yeah.
It was also a little bit after 9/11 and then the July 7 bombings. Mm. I think those were really, I think they made us more nervous.
I think definitely July 7th did. That was a big one for us.
That was very close to where we were, wasn't it?
Mm.
Well, he came out of the...
I was on a train that was going into King's Cross, and they stopped us halfway between and said there's been some sort of power outage, took us back to One Last, and then got everyone out. So I went around and started looking for a bus. And at that point, Bex called me and said, don't get on the buses. They're bombing them. And at that point, I thought, okay, I'll just walk, which took me about 2 hours. Walking past and seeing people coming out of places with all smoke and ash and all that sort of stuff across them, it was just terrible. But of course, all the phones had gone dead by that stage, so I wasn't able to tell anyone where I was. And Bex was panicking and calling people at Fidelity to see if I was there, and people were really getting worried when I hadn't shown up. But I was there. I was just taking my time.
I recall it being called just after Haywards Heath. So I was coming up from Brighton on the first train, which would have been the 5:09. And I was called because there'd been, as I recall at least, forewarning that something could happen. And I was called, you know, where, because I was, like yourself, one of the early ones in. I think sometimes we used to race each other in so you could be there first. Me, you, or Rick. So I said, where are you? I said, well, I'm nearby. I'm kind of not far away. I was coming into Blackfriars, I think, by the time I'd managed to return the call, at which point I think events were starting to happen. And I was evacuating the traders under St. Paul's. And I was part of that team of people with Louise and Co and Mary trying to call people. And yeah, like I say, you couldn't get through to anybody. And of course, you want to try and get through to your family too.
That Mary Lipscomb.
Yes, yeah.
She was my hero that day.
So calm. So
she,
calm.
Honestly, even when she didn't have news for me, she still called me to check on me.
Mm. Yeah, what a lady. So calm. And I think that was probably the I did some 9/11 work, but more remotely, well, completely remotely. But with that being so close, I didn't see anything because I was underground. I didn't hear anything because I was underground, but it impacted me. I remember getting on the train on the way home, not crying or anything, but just thinking, is this worth it? Is this really worth it? You know, and I was nowhere near, don't get me wrong, I was nowhere near physically to the events, but seeing yourself coming and others coming who'd seen it and hearing and then seeing the news, it was just you start to realize, you know, what am I choosing to do here and what am I having to do. I think that was my thing.
That was a lot of what it was part of what we actually talked about when we decided that we would be going back home to New Zealand. Yeah, we thought that'd be a much safer, you know, we don't have those sort of things in New Zealand. Ironically, the Christchurch massacre happened recently, which was absolutely terrible. Although, actually, that was something I was thinking about, And I'm not sure how, I mean, there's all the things that are happening in America and now, of course, and, you know, the shooter is plastered everywhere in New Zealand. And I'm not sure if it was a choice by the New Zealand media, but they just don't mention who the shooter was of that. And we can't even remember who he was.
No.
He didn't get his any of his manifesto read or published. And it was just all complete focus just on the victims and the togetherness and how we could actually get through it.
Yep.
So it's a massive change from a media perspective of how they've actually reported on that.
He did not get his 15 minutes of fame.
No. Yeah. And you know,
just walking in jail.
Yeah, so and I think that's as it should be. You know, there are people that are impacted by others' actions. We should be looking after the people that are impacted, not those.
Yeah.
Well, what a let's try and it's not easy to move on from those. The three of us moved on at similar times. I left Fidelity in 2008 to go and work closer to home in Brighton. I think you left in 2008 to go and be closer to home in Auckland. So quite the switch.
Literally Christmas Eve, and he arrived back. So arrived in New Zealand Christmas morning, and the TV3 media were doing a piece on families being reunited at Christmas. Now, I'd been up since 4:30 making homemade strawberry ice cream, because you know what I'm like, David. I'm very hospitable. And it was Christmas Day and I was feeding 16. So here I was. So I looked like crap. And he walked through fine and dandies, had a great sleep on the flight, and they said, could we interview you and your wife and your little boy? And he was like, sure. And so there I am on the 7 o'clock news looking, I could have killed him.
I just wanted to have the opportunity to be able to say all my friends in London, see, this is how small New Zealand is. It's actually big news that I've come home.
Yeah. Oh, that would have been, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I think his soccer team really appreciated that. Sorry, football.
We can live with soccer. This is a global audience. It's good.
Okay, yeah.
It's good.
Well, his team was football that played the old.
They still play.
The old, do they? Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, they're getting old, but they still play.
You guys were old when you started.
Walking football now. And how was it? How, you know, that choice? Obviously, there was family reasons and career reasons, but how it's obviously worked out. But at the time, how was it? What was kind of the really
horrible?
It was pretty tough. It was a big, big decision.
Just about changed my mind and sent the container back.
Oh no!
I kid you not.
Yeah. Oh look, we made some brilliant friends in the UK. You know, we chose not to actually be Kiwis, for sake of the word, in England. We wanted to actually stay in places where it wasn't just Kiwis. We wanted to mix with English people and all people there. But we didn't want to be the cliched travel 12,000 miles to then hang with people that you could have hung out with in New Zealand anyway.
It was about becoming locally integrated.
Yeah, and we always had that question as well. Do you want to stay? And we were never really sure. We really enjoyed what we were doing. We liked where we were. We'd moved up to Bedfordshire, and that was a really nice village that we managed to get in a really fantastic group of friends, all of them with twins, which was quite ironic. But then, yeah, there was when my father got sick. He had some cancer, and we sort of got to that point where my son was five. That's when school starts in New Zealand. It was like, we've either got to stay and commit to the UK, or we need to go back to New Zealand.
That's a much politer expression than he used, by the way.
But, yeah, I mean, ultimately that was actually a good choice for us personally, simply because we managed to come home and the kids got to know their grandfather, Bex's father.
Yeah.
But we won't go there.
Yeah, my dad would never have made it to England, and our daughter was just his best mate. She was just a pea in a pod, and so that wouldn't have happened. But it, yeah, initially it was very, very difficult because we found that while we'd been gone for 8 years, our friends that have been buying their little houses, you know, like I say, with the deposit of IVF was a deposit on a house, that all been buying houses, and then that all bought bigger houses, and, you know, they were growing families, and we'd been away for it all. And so our, I don't know, their kids were kind of later age and stage. And we just, with those toddler years, people didn't necessarily want to come back to, or, you know, we'd be invited out, but we couldn't get a sitter, or, you know, it was tricky. Or it were people like his old rugby mates that hadn't married up and had any yet, and they just wanted to go out boozing and having, you know, big stag do's. And then they'd like divorce a few years later and have another one. So he was just going out a lot. And it just, it was hard. It was hard to get a job. We were told that in New Zealand, London on your CV is just the thing, you know, that you want to have. But when we got home, one of the first things a recruitment consultant said to James is, if you think that having London on your experience is going to do anything for you, take it off, take that out of your head now, because everyone's got it. Which kind of made sense, and we probably should have thought of that before we came home. And by the way, dad is fine. He is now 85 last week and sitting downstairs watching television very noisily right now. So
bless him. Oh, that's good. That's good. Yeah. So I'm gonna bring us on a couple of years then. So you'd obviously gone in 2008. You were 2010, and in 2009, I had a period where, which I've never really shared, but I was having what we call thunderclap headaches, and it actually led to a doctor panicking, to be honest, but getting me straight into hospital, lumbar puncture, possible bleed on the brain, all that kind of stuff. And I remember lying in a hospital bed, and I think it's only one of the, possibly the only occasion outside of motorcycle accidents that I've been in hospital as an adult, and saying to myself, kind of saying to myself, I've got to stop being always on. I'm always on. I'm always on call. I'm always working. It's not good for me. It's not good for my marriage.
So long.
Yeah. Myself and two friends were sat in the pub, and back up north where I'm from, and kind of like, do you fancy going away? Should we go on holiday? And that escalated to, should we go around the world? And so I dropped to you guys a message saying, oh, I think we're going to be in New Zealand next year, maybe around May or June. Are you about? And you were like, yeah, come and stay. And I just remember, you know, not only did we come and stay, but you fed us. We met your amazing family. We went for flights in a biplane. And yet, you know, really until that point, we've been good colleagues at work, and that was about it. And I want to thank you both for making that choice to host us. We still talk about it today. I think Sam might be watching. But again,
thank you, Percy Pigs.
Yes. But again, you know, thank you. And, you know, is it a New Zealand thing? Is it just you guys? But just to accept four people, two strangers, just wow. What? It wasn't just stay over the night. We were there for a little while.
And then at my parents.
Yeah, so, that was so good.
Yeah. I think there was a combination of things.
I think it is a New Zealand thing. New Zealanders are quite welcoming and like to make people feel welcome. They're like, you know, New Zealand's a beautiful country, and we'd like people to see as much of that as possible. But us personally, we also like to make strong relationships with people. You know, Doug, I still chat with regularly on Messenger and that sort of stuff. And it's that sort of thing that we always love to see people. Actually, a really good case in point is the fact that Bex, as an 18-year-old, went to Brazil for her AFS. And
student exchange.
Yeah.
And while we were in London, her host brother came to London. So we're like, well, you have to stay with us, which was fantastic. It was great to meet him.
Stayed like 2 months.
Yeah. He did dye his hair blue, which was a bit strange. But when in London, he did that stuff.
Yeah.
And then when we came back to New Zealand, Bex's host sister's daughter came and lived with us for 2 months in New Zealand to learn English and be
so second generation now.
Yeah. And
that was
the update on that is Neve is actually looking to go over there around Christmas this year.
So wow.
What an experience.
It is. And my host parents have been over to visit us a couple of years ago. Oh,
that was so good.
That's brilliant.
That's the thing. James and I are people who do create good relationships with people. And he just came to me and he was like, do you remember Dara, who I used to get on really well with at work? And I was like, yep, I remember some of those war stories. And he was like, do you mind if I invite him to stay? And I was like, well, that's fine. So, you know, it's always a joint decision that, you know, that we both liked the person. But the thing is, we figure if you're all right, your wife's going to be all right. And therefore, so should your friends be. So if you're going to, you know, rob the place, well, I suppose we'll get robbed. But, yeah, seemed like a doable thing when you brought it up, didn't it?
Absolutely.
And then we found out that you really were really, really great people. So we banged my dad and said, Dad.
They're coming up north.
And then he tried to feed roast pork, his signature dish, to your vegetarian wife.
It's brilliant. I had 2 helpings, so it's all good. It's all good. I don't eat pork anymore, actually. So yeah, I'm glad I got to experience it then and not now. Otherwise, it would have been even worse.
That was an amazing night at Wildfire, that Brazilian restaurant.
Oh yes.
Oh, when Sam ate her body weight in meat, yep. And I remember Dan's response was, "You're shitting me." And yeah. I've never heard that before. And it must be a bit of a Mancunian thing or something, but I've never heard that thing. Expression before, and now I use it.
Brilliant. That's so good. We won't turn this into spatical stories just yet, but I saw Dan and Sam last week, and funnily enough, we didn't get there to the afternoon, but they'd just been to an all-you-can-eat Brazilian. And I was just like, did you do it again? And she was like, no, I don't have it in me anymore. I can't do it anymore. But yeah, so and that's, you know, then we said, oh, guess what, I'm speaking to Bex and James next week. And she said she will hopefully be pretending she's on a Zoom call, but it's us. So hopefully she'll be on. So, I mean, I guess life's gone full circle now. So if we start talking about today, Bex, you work as a people and culture manager. And obviously I know where you work, but I think it's really good for the audience to understand the synergy and how life has gone full circle for you through the choices that you've made there.
Ah, well, actually, so I'm in a little plan at the moment. So for me, I worked at Skills, which is then where James went and worked as well. So we just seem to have this thing where we just like follow each other, which was an educational
industry training organization.
So it provides those pathways for kids that go into apprenticeships, so they earn while they learn. It also looked after our Māori and Pacifica students, the ones who perhaps don't get picked up in the system, fall through the system and end up on the dole. So it helped them into apprenticeships and get the skills for those or pre-trades. And that was, so we were a not-for-profit, and that was definitely the non-profit piece, which I loved. And when you talk about being brought in for a bit of that commercial acumen and that commercial focus, that's me. I'm the person who sits there and joins all the dots of what we've got and goes, right, we need this piece of the puzzle here and we're lacking something there. And, you know, so that's part of what I do. And then I've recently just done a stint at Fertility Associates, who first diagnosed us. And wow. Interestingly enough, the doctor that diagnosed us is not there anymore, but he is still downstairs in his own practice. But they were just bought out by private equity. It kind of takes me into looking at things a little bit differently, because I really like things that just want to do stuff to help people, which is that not-for-profit and helping people space. And at the moment I'm developing a program, and James is probably going to freak out a little bit about this. My doctor knows about it, but he not so much, so he's going to freak out a little bit right now. Just be prepared.
I can turn the camera off.
A framework for helping our medical practices. We have got a massive crisis right now, and we've got a celebrity news broadcaster who put a highlight on it. She took her 3-year-old son to the A&E at the hospital with quite a bad cut above his eye, and she got the full story, and then all the messages coming in from nurses and GPs and going, it's not just the hospitals, we are struggling. And so actually I want to strengthen them from the inside out and do a couple of months volunteering doing that.
They are all struggling. Yeah. COVID's still hitting New Zealand. Yeah, we're still struggling with that. We did well for a few years. But it's really spiked like everywhere else.
It is. We're having our next surge, and I actually need to stay away from COVID for health reasons. Mm-hmm. So actually doing a couple of months of some putting together this framework and actually helping half a dozen doctor surgeries strengthen from within and really set their teams up to on how to support each other and how to get those best outcomes, how to de-escalate those angry patients, all of that. So that's what I'm looking forward to next as well.
Oh, wow.
So still in that whole HR space, but now I'm going from the PE to the voluntary, which I thought might just, you know, in the legs.
He's done well. Oh, that's so good. And I applaud you for it. And what I really like is I mentor a few people, and we've talked throughout this piece around
mentoring women.
Choices. So but we've talked about how uncomfortable we may have been in previous situations and how maybe the work we're doing isn't in line with our belief system. And I know a few people that are in that at the moment, and I say to them, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. Don't just walk up and leave. Think about where you want to be and understand your belief system, and then start taking yourself there. And I think you're a real case in point of doing that, of doing something you're passionate about, using the skills you've learned elsewhere to make a real difference. And I think that's a great choice to be making. And I think maybe we're at the stages of our lives and careers where we can do that. I think it's an inspiring story, so thank you, and I wish you every luck with that. It sounds great.
Well, hopefully it helps while I'm avoiding COVID.
Well, I hope, because I mean that we won't go into, but the international view of New Zealand is that it's escaped completely from COVID. That's what we see. It's an interesting, I didn't know that. And James, on the subject of kind of today, so you're a project delivery leader, spinning lots of projects and plates, I'm sure. Yeah. Do you think managing a team of traders, managing the information technology for traders and fund managers, do you think that prepared you well for this?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, look, those guys, the traders and fund managers, they were really smart people, really smart cookies that were looking after massive, huge amounts of money and looking at businesses in such a depth, which was just phenomenal. And it was amazing to actually just understand and just listen and hear and be able to just conceptualize how important these guys were, you know, seeing some of these amazing leaders from from around the business world. It was awesome. But for me now, it's slightly smaller projects, not as massive, but they're still very important. So where Bex was saying about Skills, how it was an industry training organisation, the government's actually completely changed that. And our business is actually split into a more commercial area, which is okay. Where I'm looking at. So that's why I've got so many projects on at the moment. We're going through a literal transformation of applications and data and people and students. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely keeping me busy all the time.
Yeah. But hopefully nobody's throwing massive wads of paper at you or giving you a little bit of abuse on a 7:30 on a Monday morning.
I remember one guy that was told that he was going to kill him at Fidelity.
I remember going from having wads of paper thrown at me to having champagne corks going off all over the place. So, yeah, great place. Right, before we wrap up, I just want to go and make somebody accountable for their words. I'm just going to pop this on screen so the internet can see it. just do that. It's Doug again. Hopefully that will pop up in a second. Oh, it's my fault. I've hit it twice. Yep. But yeah, Doug saying New Zealand in January sounds great. So
it's a very nice time of the year.
We'll hold him to that. And I mean, in terms of wrapping up, I know that your children are growing up, or pretty much growing up in Joel's case. So what next for you guys? And when can Emma and I return the favour here in the UK? Because we've got a lot to live up to.
Well, I think we'll definitely be back. We'll probably be visiting our kids with their British passports because they were British nationals. And I only found out about 9 days before we left that I needed to get them citizenship and passports, and both processes took 6 weeks each. So, and count for 13 weeks, and I had 9 days. So James was down at Parliament House with chocolate brownie and chocolate chip cookies homemade by me as a very big thank you for getting those on time.
I remember that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. New Zealand House.
So yeah, I think we'll be visiting our kids, and also we do miss it. I have one lovely friend that comes over, and we really look forward to her return. But yeah, mostly I think we're just I can't stay away from the Percy Pigs. I'm going to have to come back.
The range has expanded.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Believe me, I know. When Lucy arrived over last time, they were like, whoa. What about you?
Yeah. Actually, I miss things like Marks and Spencer's. That was actually an amazing grocery experience. Just a
ready meal.
Yeah, we hadn't experienced that in New Zealand. All you got was like cheesy lasagna that you'd microwave. That was beautiful. But no, yeah, I was so lucky to work at next to St Paul's Cathedral and be able to see so many places around there that just have so many fond memories. I remember running up and down the Thames, even when it was snowing. But yeah, and also all the people. There's, as I say before, there's lots of people that touched our lives when we were over there, and there's been lots of them that have said they're going to come over, and lots of them that have come over, and we just love seeing those people and seeing how they've grown and what's happened.
Yeah, seeing their stories, how their stories panned out.
Well, I think that's it's a great way to finish, saying the world is a massive place, but we can actually make it quite small by forming friendships and actually keeping in touch. And we've got the power of forums like this. I think that's a great place for us to close. So thank you both so much for joining me on a Friday evening. It's really good, especially on your birthday eve, Bex. So happy birthday. And thank you to everybody that's been watching. I hope you'll have seen that it really is all about choices. And I'll catch you on the next one. Goodbye.